And because you subscribe to the podcast, you get a little bit of a Christmas bonus. Wouldn't we all love a Christmas bonus? But here's yours. Heather, take it away.
Hey, guys. We're going to have an audio advent this December, also available on our YouTube channel. So please check that out. But if you subscribe to the podcast, every day you'll get either a little bit of music or you'll get a story about the angels in our lives who help us achieve our better selves.
And that comes from past guests who you will recognize. And they were so generous to say, oh, I'd love to share one of those stories.
Yes, we had dozens of people respond and say they want to tell about the angel in their life. So look for that. It'll be dropping every day. We're super excited to bring it to you, and we hope it makes your winter season a little brighter.
And one of the things the Catholic faith teaches is, since God is omnipotent, he wouldn't allow any evil unless he was going to bring good out of it. And so even when bad things happen in life, as they do, like your wife dying at age 27, good will ultimately be brought out of that bad experience.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. Welcome to In Good Faith. This week, our guest Jimmy Akin is going to lead us on a little bit of a journey, partially to find out what an apologist is, which actually doesn't have anything to do with saying, oh, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry, but goes somewhere completely different in religious terms, and generously shares his journey to find a different place than he started in his own Christian faith.
Yeah. And in fact, he's the senior apologist at Catholic Answers, and he has more than 30 years defending and explaining the faith. And he's going to share with us his conversion to Catholicism. And in fact, if you wanted to look this up, he has a chapter in a book called Surprised by Truth, which is actually a series of Catholic conversion stories. And his is called The Triumph and the Tragedy.
So I ask about how his faith life began.
My parents were Church of Christ, which is a common denomination here in the American South. They were both from Texas, and Texas is actually where I was born. But I grew up here in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and my parents had some kind of disagreement with the elders of their church when I was about 6 years old, and they stopped going. And so after that, I was raised nominally Protestant. Mm. We'd go to church a couple times a year when we visited relatives, but other than that, we really didn't go. And then when I was 20, I believed God existed, so I was a theist, but I didn't think that anyone really knew anything about God. Then I had a conversion to Christ in an evangelical context. And one of the things I did as an evangelical was I made a point of studying the theology of all different branches of Christendom, because here in Fayetteville, we've got bunches and bunches of churches. Mm-hmm. And I realized that what church is within convenient driving distance and what church has music I like and what church has a preacher I like, none of those are good tests of what's true. And I want the truth. So I made a point of studying the theologies of all different branches of Christendom. And when I was 27, I made a discovery. I was reading a book. It happened to be by a Catholic. It had an extended quotation from Matthew 16 in it, which contains the "You are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church" passage. As I was looking over this passage on this particular day, I realized there are structural features in the text that are so obvious they're even there in English. You don't have to go to the Greek, although they're there in the Greek too. And they require that Peter be the rock that Jesus is talking about, that he says he's going to build his church on. And I said, well, if Peter's the rock on which Jesus builds the church, then once Jesus goes back to heaven, that means Peter's in charge. And whoever's in charge of the earthly church in Jesus' absence, that's a good description of the office of the Pope. And so if Catholics were right that Peter's the first Pope, then they could be right about other things. And so what I needed to do was go through all of the categories of systematic theology with an open mind towards the Catholic position. And so I took about a year doing that, and I concluded that the Bible teaches the Catholic faith, and I needed to become a Catholic. So this is the triumph part of the story. The tragedy part of the story is that my wife, Renee, she had always been in frail health throughout our marriage. And she had ulcerative colitis, and it would periodically flare up, and it would cause intestinal discomfort and things like that. And she had what we thought was another flare-up. We were very poor, but we were trying to get her what help we could. And it then turned out this is not ulcerative colitis. This is advanced metastatic colon cancer. Mm. And it was very, very aggressive. Her oncologist said he thought she'd only had it a few months, and it was just tearing through her system. From the time her first symptom manifested to the time she died was just over 2 months. And I was actually received into the Catholic Church in her hospital room using the emergency shortened form of the rites 4 days before she died. And so that's the tragedy that happened at the same time.
I'm so sorry to hear that. I read a little about that, but did that allow her to die knowing that your marriage, the two of you, was valid for the Catholic Church?
Well, we'd already actually taken care of that. At a certain point, we had our marriage convalidated. That's the technical term. The more colloquial term for it is we had our marriage blessed.
Oh, that's lovely. I'm glad that she was still there for that. Jimmy, you're called a senior apologist. What does it mean to be an apologist? Because this is a long Christian tradition. Lots of us know C.S. Lewis and some of the other apologists. What does that mean to you?
Apologia in Greek means a speech from a position. So I'm a Christian apologist, so I defend the Christian faith. And I'm also a Catholic apologist, so I defend the Catholic understanding of the Christian faith. And I've been doing it for 31 years now.
There is something about faith, even the word faith, which is that we have some sort of hope or belief in something, mm-hmm. as Paul tells us. And yet we want answers. Maybe this is a two-part question. The first one is, where do you turn when you don't know the answer to something someone's asking? And second, what's knowable and what's unknowable?
Well, so in regard to the first one, if I don't know the answer to something, I do my research. What resources I will look up will depend on the nature of the question they ask. And then I consult the relevant resources, looking for the most authoritative ones. So that's the basic answer to that question. One thing, though, that I tend to get is a lot of questions that are not easy to, well, I'll put it this way, they're not standard for most apologists, mm-hmm. because my philosophy is there are no bad questions, only bad answers. And so anytime anyone asks me a question, I'll take it seriously. I don't care what the question is. And I'm not going to dismiss a question because it's weird or out there. I'm not going to make fun of the person who is asking the question. If someone wants to know something, I'll do my best to give them an answer. So we're on between 300 and 400 radio stations here in the U.S. People in our audience started to notice that about me. And so it's like, we could ask Jimmy anything and he'll take it seriously. And so they started asking deliberately weird questions. Like, if you're a vampire, can you commit suicide to avoid predating on other people? Or if you have a zombie, can you use the zombie for slave labor? And is it ethical to do that?
Does this mean you have a Halloween edition of your program?
Well, I do, but even more frequently than that, every couple of months we do a Weird Questions with Jimmy Akin show where we take deliberately weird questions and then I use principles from Catholic faith and morals to analyze the question and formulate a response. Even if it involves a fantasy scenario like vampires or zombies, I can still take actual principles and deduce an answer, like if vampires were real, here is the answer, or if zombies were real, here is the answer. Now, people will think commonly that the Catholic Church, because it's been around for 2,000 years, they'll think it has an answer for everything. But actually, the Church's teachings are more restricted than you might think, and there's a lot of room for diversity of opinion in the Catholic Church. Many things the Church has no teaching on at all, and it allows theologians or other experts in other fields like science to figure out the answers to things. And so if there's not a firm teaching on something, what I do is I point that out and I try to articulate the range of different options that are available for people. And I may give my opinion, but it's always flagged as my opinion because there's a lot we don't know, and we do indeed live in a mysterious world.
Which is kind of exciting in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it is.
You mentioned doing this for 30 years. What do you know or feel about God now that you didn't 30 years ago when you were on this journey?
Well, obviously my knowledge of various areas has grown a lot in 30 years. I'm an autodidact, so I'm a self-teacher and I'm always studying. Mm-hmm. And so in terms of intellectual knowledge of God, that's grown significantly in the last 30 years. In terms of a personal relationship with God and feelings, I think I have a better appreciation of God's love now than I did 30 years ago. We're told in the Bible that God is love, but the people we meet and how we're raised and the images of God that we're presented with in life can interfere with an accurate understanding of who God is. And so I don't think, the same appreciation for God's infinite love then. I mean, intellectually, I knew, okay, God is an infinitely perfect, eternal being who's always existed. He's always been infinitely perfect. He's always been infinitely loving. But I didn't have as much of a feel for that in terms of my heart knowledge as I do now. So I would say that's one thing that I have grown in appreciation of over the last 30 years.
I spoke with a monk at a Trappist Abbey a couple of months ago, and he talked about the process of his faith going from here to here, which I think is what you're describing.
From head to heart.
How do you experience God's love, or how did you come to that?
So I guess I'd say a couple things. First one is there's lots of different spiritualities in the Catholic Church. Some people have a Marian spirituality. Some people have a traditionalist spirituality. Some people have a Jesuit spirituality or a Dominican spirituality. I have a meat and potatoes spirituality. I'm very basic. And I mean, I understand a lot of things, but I don't identify with any one school. And so I have a very basic, practical approach. And I kind of take things one step at a time in life. And so when something happens, I respond to it, I deal with it, I pray about it, I trust God, I take a step forward, experimenting, hoping that I'm going in the right direction and trusting God to get me where I need to go in the end. And so it's really just living life one step at a time in openness and trust and letting God lead me where He wants me to go. And as you live life and as you get older, you're going to encounter problems. And one of the things the Catholic faith teaches is since God is omnipotent, He wouldn't allow any evil unless He was going to bring good out of it. And so even when bad things happen in life, as they do, like your wife dying at age 27, good will ultimately be brought out of that bad experience. Some years ago, I was taking a phone call from a guy who had been a Protestant minister, and he had lost his ministry because he had gotten involved with a woman other than his wife and so forth. And I was talking to him over the phone, and I was expressing sympathy for his situation and trying to help him out in the ways I could. He later called back and he talked to one of my coworkers, and he remarked on me and said how I must have suffered to be that compassionate. And my coworker told me, and I hadn't really thought of it in those terms, but I'd certainly been through a lot of suffering, and I try to be compassionate and understanding for everybody and treat everyone with dignity. And I'd have to say that some of my own experiences played a role in forming my character in that way.
Are there particular saints you have felt drawn to or connected with?
I have a maternal relationship with the Virgin Mary. In fact, when my own mother died very unexpectedly, she died at age 56, which I'm older than that now. She just came home one day and had an aneurysm. But I made it to the side of her hospital bed before she died. And one of the things I did was, now that I was Catholic, I entrusted the care of my earthly mother to my heavenly mother, Mary. And so I have a Marian devotion as well. Although, as I said, I'm pretty meat and potatoes. I'm not super strong in any one direction.
You're listening to In Good Faith. Back with more in just a moment. Hi, I'm Stephen Cap Perry, host of In Good Faith. Nothing captivates me more than people setting out on an adventure, especially if it's a place I wish I could go to or a subject I wish I knew more about, but I don't live in the right place or I don't have the equipment or the expertise. I'm telling you about a podcast from our BYU Radio family of podcasts, an award-winning podcast called Constant Wonder. With host Marcus Smith, you'll be expanding your horizons on all kinds of discovery. It could be science, it could be art, history, and more. Do you need that feeling of awe and wonder in your life more? I do, and I love it when I see how to experience that by hearing the stories of people who are doing and exploring all of those things that are so interesting to me. Check out the podcast, Constant Wonder.
Welcome back to In Good Faith. I'm speaking with Jimmy Akin. There's so much misinformation that gets spread. One of the rules of Christopher Stendahl at the Harvard Divinity School Lutheran Bishop was, if you want to know about someone's faith, go talk to them. Don't talk about them.
Yes.
And so I'm wondering, is there something that you wish people who are not Catholic knew about Catholicism that would maybe clear things up?
The real answer is it would depend on the group I'm talking to. But since America is a historically Protestant country, one of the things that I think has been a significant source of misunderstanding is the doctrine of justification and salvation. Protestants use a formula that they say we're justified by faith alone. And they perceive Catholics as teaching something else, as teaching that we're justified by faith and works. Well, okay, there's a few problems with that. One of them is the Catholic Church in its documents never uses the formula justified by faith and works. Mm-hmm. It never articulates its faith in that way. Second, it does not condemn the formula by faith alone. In fact, as Pope Benedict the 16th said just a few years ago, Luther's formula, justification by faith alone, is true as long as you understand the faith in terms of what St. Paul refers to as faith working through love in Galatians 5. If that's the kind of faith you have, if it's faith that not only includes intellectual belief and also trust in God and also love for God, then that faith does justify you, and you're in a state of justification or salvation. So we don't actually need to fight about this formula. And people are also surprised to learn who else agreed with that was John Calvin. On the Protestant side, he said, if your faith doesn't include love, it's not worth calling it faith. It's not the right kind. Now, there's a technical term in theology for this kind of faith. It's sometimes called formed faith, meaning faith formed by charity or faith formed by love. But actually, the two sides can agree on justification by faith formed by love. And so right there, a huge bone of contention goes away between Protestants and Catholics. And I've been trying to get this message out to both Protestants and Catholics, both of whom need to hear that.
I'm wondering, what brings you the most joy in your faith?
Well, several different things. One of the things is receiving my Lord in Holy Communion. Another is being forgiven my sins in confession. Mm-hmm. Another is the joy of discovery. I lead an intellectual life. I'm an autodidact, and I love discovering new things. And it's so cool to learn new things, whatever the field is, whether it's theology or I also study science. I study mathematics. I study a lot of different subjects, and I love learning new stuff. It is so awesome. And that's one of the things that drives me to be an autodidact, is just the pleasure I get from learning new things. One of the things I sometimes see in various apologetics channels is apologists of whatever persuasion, including Catholic, who have a spiritually superior negative attitude where what they're principally about is tearing down other people and looking down on other people and not really trying to understand the other people. And that kind of proceeding from a position of spiritual superiority to others and thinking I and we are better than them, a constant diet of that, that's not spiritually healthy. That's the equivalent of physically picking out on fast food every day, six times a day. That is not healthy for you spiritually. I look at apologists who take that kind of approach where like every YouTube video they put out, they're just looking down on other people. It's like, don't you have any joy? Don't you ever learn something and just want to share it with others? Because it's so cool to have discovered this. And I think that bringing the joy of discovery to other people is spiritually healthy, and it's vastly superior in terms of spiritual health to constantly looking down on other people. That then kind of brings me to the outer sphere, which is helping others. Because by doing broadcasts and writing articles and interacting with people and answering their questions, I'm ultimately helping other people. And that brings me joy in the faith as well.
Oh, I love hearing that. And, you know, I had another question, but really you just you just answered it, which was I was going to ask how we can be an apologist for our own faith while we still listen to and value the experiences of people in other faiths. You've just said it, that we need to listen to people and enjoy learning it, teaching it, without needing to feel like you look down on other people.
Yeah, I try never to look down on other people. I also, you know, disagree with people's views, and I have arguments for why I disagree with them, but that doesn't mean they're a bad person. And I try never to make it personal. To give an example, a while back, I did an episode, a pair of episodes on Mysterious World on Ellen Gould White. She was the founding prophetess of Seventh-day Adventism. And so she reported visions. So I wanted to look at her visions from a neutral perspective. Because what I would find in going online and doing research on Ellen Gould White, almost everybody was turning it into a theological fight where they said, Ellen Gould White taught this doctrine and that doctrine is wrong, therefore she's a false prophetess. And that just reduces the question to, do you agree with her theology or not? And that is not what I wanted to do. I'm actually a paranormal field investigator. I actually have training in parapsychology. I also teach parapsychology at the Ryan Education Center. So I wanted to look at Ellen Gould White's reported visions from a neutral perspective where I'm not assuming anything about theology, and I'm just looking at the evidence of, do we have anything paranormal happening here? And so I tried to look at her visions very respectfully and evidentially, and I've actually been contacted by Seventh-day Adventists, including former Seventh-day Adventist preachers, who have thanked me for how I handled her respectfully, and they were able to listen to my evaluation in a way that they weren't able to listen to other people's evaluations because of the approach I took, rather than just trying to run her down because of theological disagreements.
Yeah, of which they had probably had their fill.
Yeah.
Finally, Jimmy, and what a pleasure to speak with you. You're so generous with your time and sharing your experiences. Is there a certain scripture or chapter or maybe a parable, something in scripture that's kind of a touchstone for you?
So two things off the top of my head. One of them is Peter's exhortation to cast all your cares on Jesus or God because he cares for you. So if that, you know, a lot of people, everyone at different points in their lives has anxieties, and God wants to take those anxieties and help you deal with them. So you don't need to be wrapped up in anxious thoughts all the time. The other one comes from St. Paul. In 1 Thessalonians 5, he's talking to the Thessalonians, some of whom have apparently begun to despise prophecy. And he says, don't despise prophecy. Do not quench the Spirit. Instead, he says, test everything and hold fast to what is good. And of course, the way you test something is you look at it critically You don't just base it on feelings of how do I feel about this, because our hearts are unreliable, but you apply objective evidence tests, and is it consistent with what's previously been revealed and so forth. And so test everything and hold fast to whatever's good.
You just heard Jimmy Akin talking about testing everything. And I loved him talking about the whole year that he spent learning about and researching and studying the Catholic faith. And I kind of think that all of us, regardless of our faith tradition, could maybe afford to spend more effort learning about the faith that we profess, whether that be intellectually or in some other way. I appreciate the kind of academic approach to his faith that he had.
Yeah, but he doesn't just stop with the academic. In fact, he makes a point of coming to appreciate at some point what he calls the heart knowledge of God's love, that until it actually kind of reached him heart-wise, it wasn't as active or motivating in his life.
This is really fascinating to me that he is approaching the work of apologia with there are no bad questions. And in fact, I'm going to take you seriously, and I'm going to track down whatever I can to answer your question.
And he even makes episodes out of those, what you might call of like non-serious questions. You mentioned the vampire and right, that kind of stuff. But he takes people kind of at face value, and he's willing to do that.
But that to me is really generous. That's just a real generous thing to do with people.
And it kind of mimics his approach to apologetics as a whole. He talked about how some people, in defending their faith, like to tear down other people's faith.
Right.
But he sticks to the idea that he just defends his own, and it's not about, like, spiritual high ground.
The trouble is, if we ever claim that, I mean, there's only room for one at the top of that mountaintop,
yeah.
And it doesn't make room for anybody else. Many thanks to Jimmy Akin for speaking with us today. This episode was produced by James Sturdivant. Our production team also includes Heather Bigley and Aaliyah Ebert, Leah King, Katarina Martinich, and Josh Orton. Our post-production sound designers are Lauren Sandberg, Mark Hansen, and Brandon Lewis. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. We hope you'll leave us a comment or a review wherever you get your podcast. That helps spread the word. And we love to spread interfaith understanding. We think it could not hurt today's world. Find us on social media, on Twitter, In Good Faith Pod. Instagram and Facebook are In Good Faith Podcast. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/@in-good-faith. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join us again soon, right here in Good Faith.